time to dim the lights and open your minds. Let yourself go. Travel along the many roads that populate the vast landscape of the paranormal on Parachallenged Radio with your host, PC. Parachallenged Radio is a Jackalope Radio production. Join us in the chat at www.parachallengedradio.com, or you can go to jackaloperadio.com in the shows area and click on the Parachallenged Radio banner. Don't miss the fun every Tuesday night, right here on Jackalope Radio. And now, your host into the wild world of the beyond, PC.
I'm here with Todd, my producer.
Hello.
Hello. Just like the good old days, Todd.
It is. It's crazy.
Oh, my. We have a really great show for you tonight. We're going to be talking with Marty and Michael Perry, and we've had them on the show before. It's been quite a while. The wonderful Dawn Shy just loved these two, and she made them, she talked about them quite often, and just made me endeared to them as well through her excitement every time she spoke about them and really shared her insights in their abilities and what it is that they do. And they have written a book with an author, Laura Hirsch, called The Other Side of Autism. And we'll be getting into that whole section later. But it's really highly interesting. If, you know, autism is not something you really heard a lot of. I knew it was there, but until I had developed a friendship with one of my BFFs, so to speak, her son has some of these same, you know, characteristics of autism, and until you really know someone who's going through it, you you really start looking into what it is, you want to know more and understand more so that you can, you know, better work with people that have this, you know, these difficulties. I'm really looking forward to getting into that. But first, I really want to start out with Michael and Marty Perry and really show you who they are. I'll let them tell you what they've been doing. I mean, these people are amazing. Welcome to the show, Michael and Marty.
Hello there.
Hi there,
it's Kathy. Great to have you. And Don, like I said, Don just loved you too, and she always spoke very, very highly of you, and I'm so glad you're back.
Yeah, we love Dawn too. We loved her just as much back.
I'm sure. She was a lovable person.
Yeah, I miss Dawn.
I do too. But I know she's still with us, she's still around us, and I know she listens in every once in a while, and I'm not psychic to know that. I just know it, you know, when you have attachments to people that you care about and you talk to on a regular basis and you're involved with, you know, they got to be hanging around, you know, whispering in your ear every once in a while. It's just, how often do we stop and listen? But you guys do stop and listen a little bit more often than most of us.
Yeah, once in a while.
Yeah.
So why don't you explain how this works and how you got started and when you realized that you could do these things? You're quite the pair. You're quite the team.
Well, we've been doing it in public about 15 years, but we were doing it before that. And Marty got into it later on. I've been doing this stuff since I was a teenager, basically. I used to do healing in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s, and I was aware of spirit people working through me, you know. I'd see their hands and that moving into the body while I was just very simple pranic healing, long before Reiki it was even, you know, on the radar. I could hear them tell me things about the people I was working on. I just didn't know who they were at the time. I just never thought to ask them, I guess. I just knew they were there and working, and whoever they were, it was fine by me, you know. And it's really only later in life that I got into this. A medium, when I was, I think I was 20 or 21, he told me later on in life, he said, you're going to become extremely psychic. And you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And he told me I'd live in California, and he told me a lot of things. And he said, you'll do psychic healing. Well, I guess because I was doing hands-on healing, I thought, you know, using a kitchen knife, opening people up, pulling out tumors, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Kind of like the hands-on healers down in South America and all that kind of thing. So in my mind, I sort of had it fixed that I was going to be a psychic healer. And when I started doing this, and it wasn't something that I really thought I was going to be doing, I thought I was really going to be doing healing. And I suppose it really opened my eyes to how healing this is for people. Because, you know, as I progressed and I did more and more of this, I started to realize that that's what he meant. Because it's a form of healing. You know, people say things like, oh, you know, one session was worth the 10 years of therapy I spent. You know, things like that. And I began to realize that this was like psychic healing, emotional healing, mental healing, kind of all in one. And so that's basically it. And then Marty, as I say, got into it a bit later on, so she can tell you about that. But, you know, I can see them pretty clearly. I can hear them very well. I can feel them and I can smell things. So I have all the senses going on. I can see them that clearly that I can recognize the ones that Marty's drawn, and I know whether I saw them or not. So, but, you know, Marty's a really good artist, so she can knock these pictures out in 15 minutes.
And I do have Don's DVD. That has you guys on it. I don't remember the title of it. Is it The Messengers?
Messengers.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Messengers. And that is amazing. It really is amazing. She sent them that and another one to me for my birthday one year, and that is just really incredible. It's just seeing the way that you two work together, and you know, there's Marty drawing, and it comes out to look exactly like what. You know, it's amazing. I mean, I sat there with my mouth hanging open watching the whole DVD, going, "How do they do that?" it's incredible.
I think the best compliment I ever got was from a skeptic that emailed me and said that the portraits looked suspiciously like the photos, and it's like. Well, thanks, that's the idea. But of course, I don't get the photos until later.
right. And that's the amazing part. It's just the accuracy and, you know, of what Michael's getting and what you're drawing. And it's like, wow. And if you've never experienced this yourselves, I know people would love to, you know, come and see you. And I notice you're doing some events here and there. Are you doing a lot of them where we can like direct people to see you and have this experience, even if you don't do a reading for them or a session for them, but just at least let them witness what it is that you do? Because I was floored, you know, just watching that DVD session.
Yeah, we do a lot of group sessions here and there. Usually it's, you know, we do a lot around the LA area. But then we just got back from San Diego. We go down there every couple of months. This weekend we're going up to Virginia City, Nevada, and doing an event with Mark and Debbie Constantino, the EVP specialists. And we're
that should be great.
We're doing a group up there, which you don't have to be a part of the event to come to the group. And then we're going down to Las Vegas. First time we've been in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks. And then we do shows with Dave Schrader
which
Darkness Radio.
Yeah, Darkness Radio, which this is going to be his last event, at least he says so, at the Stanley Hotel, and that's in November. Mostly I keep in touch with people on Facebook.
If anyone wants to know where we're going to be, they can just go to our webpage and... What?
No,
yes,
I
they can.
Keep it up.
No, but they can sign... They can go to... Thank you.
Okay.
They can go to our webpage and sign into our... sign up on for our email list.
Newsletter,
that's it.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, that'd be a great way to find out where you're going to be and if you're going to be close by, you know, or nearby enough to get there and experience this and maybe even get lucky enough to experience the whole, you know, Michael Marty Perry experience. So can you kind of explain to those listening how it happens? You describe, Michael, what you're seeing, what the person looks like, what they're telling you to Marty so she can draw it out, and how descriptive?
Oh, no, it's got nothing. No, I don't say anything to Marty. I don't tell Marty anything. This is nothing between Marty and I. If Marty and I were in two different places, we'd be doing things separately. She's a medium and I'm a medium. We just happen to be married. So when we're doing this, I'm doing my thing and she's doing her thing. And if she happens to draw one of the people that I'm talking to, all fair and good. But a lot of the time she'll draw people that I've not talked to. We had an interesting one this weekend in the group. In the midst of the evening, there was a fellow that came in and talked to me, and he said, I died in a war, I got blown up, he said. And, put it down. She's distracting me, hold on.
Oh.
Hold on. There was a lady in the group who had written a book about Iraq, her experiences out in Iraq. And so I wondered if it was for her, you know, if this fellow was for her. And there were a couple of guys that I felt that maybe she'd written about that were trying to come in and say hello, but she never knew them. So I said some things, some names, and they were some people that she'd written about, but this guy seemed to be a separate guy. So finally he said to me, I belong to a person in the back row. So I said to everybody, you know, he belongs to someone in the back row. Nobody was saying anything. But he was very insistent. He just kept saying, I got blown up. I was in a war and I got blown up, he kept saying. So I went over to further round to the far end, and finally some names I said, this lady spoke up and she said, could he be from the Civil War? Like that. And I said, so I asked him and he said, yes. I said, yes, this guy is from the Civil War. And then I said a name, I believe, and that was her great-great grandfather. Her great-great uncle. Her granddad's brother. So he told me that he was in the Union Army. He told me he was a sergeant, he played the bugle, and that he had been in one of the final battles just before, a large battle just before the end of the war. He said he was just about to get out of the war and he got killed, he said, and he was running across a field and he got blown up. And he told me about an injury to his leg, a really bad injury prior to that, because she said he'd been injured several times. And I said, well, this injury to his leg that I kept feeling the whole time, was a bit, and she said yes, and she understood all of it. And she had on her finger a diamond in a ring, and the diamond was from her grandfather's tie pin, his brother, the brother of the guy talking to me. So, you know, I could feel him, I could feel his messed up leg, where he got, I think he got badly shot up or or again blown up, and his leg was hurt. But then he got back into the war again, and you know, and he was a sergeant, and he was in the Union Army.
Wow. So it just shows you just got to think out of the box. You never know who's going to come through. When we do private sessions, I always have my headphones on, so I'm not influenced by anything that Michael says. Because I might be drawing a man, and he's talking to another man, and he's saying this man has a mustache, and, you know, I might think that's the man I'm drawing, and it's a completely different man. So it works better when, you know, I can't hear anything that he says.
Right, it's like a don't cross the streams, right? In the whole Ghostbusters thing, don't cross the streams. But yeah, that's really good. It keeps your integrity, you know, in check, and you know, it keeps your work like you said, separate from his. And that's why I really put that out there. I mean, I know I obviously from, you know, knowing you guys for a while knew how it worked, but I just want everyone to understand, you know, coming into this, you know, what it is exactly that you do, and so they get a really good picture, especially when we start talking later about the book with Laura Hirsch and the people from the other side that came through and helped out with, you know, theories and thoughts and ideas and things like that. I just really want them to understand who you both are and what your abilities are, so that when we get to that point, they'll understand how you were able to achieve some of these connections.
Yeah, I even had a lady this weekend say, you know, ask me, you know, if I look at people and draw an older version, and I said, you know, I wouldn't even be able to do that because we do a lot of sessions over the phone. Plus the fact that oftentimes I've drawn, you know, a completely different race of a person for the people sitting with me. You know, you just can never tell who it's going to be.
Right. Yeah, we had you know, we get every kind of person come see us. Once we had the Jamaican guy come with his Jamaican wife and his Jamaican kids, and
dreadlocks and all.
Yeah, dreadlocks down to his shoulders, you know.
And I drew this older Caucasian man, and that was father.
He was white. Wow. He was a white English guy. I said, there's a white guy standing next to you. His name's George. He said, that's my dad.
Wow.
And it was kind of amazed me, really. He's black, you know. I mean, black than Obama, you know. So, you know, you couldn't see that he had half white, half black in him. He looked black, you know. So,
right.
There you go, you see. So if anyone out there thinks that she's getting the image from, or the idea of an image from the person sitting with us, it's just not so.
Yeah, plus, you know, I draw, you know, it's not always relatives, it could be friends. You know, if you look at the person and draw somebody that looks like them, you're going to miss a lot of things, like, what if they were adopted, hmm?
Right, exactly. Wow, have you ever had that come up, or no?
Oh, we get a lot of that. That's very confusing, because it's like, you have four grandmothers and four grandfathers over there.
Oh, my. Wow. What is the most memorable session that you've done? The one that really even kind of left you standing there going, wow, did that just really happen? Is there one instance for each of you that, you know, that one that really sticks with you?
There's a lot more than one.
Well, I couldn't say one. There's,
no, we've got
different like types of connections, but
I think one of my favorite things to happen, it's not so much the session was that memorable, but I get help from other artists on the other side quite often. And one person that comes through often is I can't even think of his name now. But anyway, the most memorable time twice it happened was Van Gogh came through and helped me.
Oh, wow.
Norman Rockwell comes through once in a while, too. But the thrill of my life was Van Gogh, because I've got this real heart connection with him. And Michael will tell you, when that happened, we were at an event, and afterwards I couldn't even talk. I couldn't even tell him what happened, because I just couldn't even talk. I was just so flabbergasted, I guess you would say, and just the energy was just, it just blew me away.
You just kind of envision him standing over your shoulder, pointing, going, "No, draw that. No, right here. A little more right here.
You can tell by the style that, you know, if you look at my pictures on the website, you can see that a lot of them are drawn in a completely different style. I can always tell when Norman Rockwell comes through. He often likes to draw profiles just because they're interesting. He likes the interesting people. And it was a completely different style when Van Gogh came through. I also had this guy, he hasn't come through in a long time. There was a guy that used to draw the caricatures for TV Guide. I don't remember his name, but that's the style. So for, you know, a few times that he came through, I was drawing caricatures rather than just portraits.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, I get a kick out of that, because it's almost like I'm still drawing it. It's hard to explain. I'm still drawing it, but it's almost like watching myself draw in a different way.
Would it fall into like an automatic writing only with art?
Yeah, a little bit to that, yeah. It's not completely automatic, because they still use my skills.
Right.
But they do help me. You know, I can almost... It just moves differently. It's like I usually don't have to erase or start over or anything when I'm doing it with them. It's like so exact that I'm hardly in control, let's say that.
Wow, that is amazing. It really is amazing. How many people can say that? they draw with Vincent Van Gogh and Norman Rockwell. Wow, that's amazing. And you've also had encounters with, and we'll lead up to a few more of these real gray matter smart guys in relation to the book, which is coming up. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And I just really want people to be able to go, and if they want to, while we're talking right now, and look at some of those pictures. Marty, what is the website?
It's really easy. It's Spirit Art, all one word, spiritart.com.
Awesome. So, yeah, if you want to go check it out and have a look at some of her drawings while we're talking, that would be wonderful. That would be great. Go have a look, and you'll be able to tell exactly what we're talking about here by looking at it. And I would love to have a session with you guys one of these days. So you'll have to kind of let us know if that information is contained on your website as well, or is that more of a Facebook thing that you prefer to set up through Facebook or the website?
Well, you can go to the website. That gives us a better view, gives you a better view of what we do and everything. The only problem with the website is it's very hard for me to do the calendar. So the calendar doesn't get kept up on there. I keep up more things and more communication on Facebook. But the very best way to find out where we're going to be is to sign up for our newsletter.
Awesome.
And I send that out every month.
Definitely great. Now, how did you get, we'll kind of lead into the book a little bit, unless there's something else that you want to address, but I'm thinking we should kind of elaborate a little bit more on some of the interactions that you've had with the other side regarding this autism. How did it all get rolling as far as the mediumship standpoint? Was it when Laura approached you about doing the book, or did you approach her about, oh, well, we got this information from the other side? How did this all come together where you ended up working with Laura on the book?
Well, I think that it'd be cool to include Laura in that, actually. she actually probably remembers more than us because she wrote the book. I've read the book. There's a few little errors here and there which we'll have to correct at some point, but on the whole, it's just verbatim what was said, you know, in the course of the session. So I just let her put whatever she wanted to put in the book. Basically, we'd met Laura before, but I didn't remember her. So when she came to see us when we were up in Reno, I guess in her mind, she had, I didn't know what she'd been up to or anything, and she'd written these other books, and one of them with another medium and everything. So when she came to see us, she, in her mind, said to herself, if he even mentions Albert Einstein in the session, then maybe he'll do something with me, or maybe we can work together. And that's what happened. I started talking about him. And then I didn't know she had an autistic son. I didn't really know anything about her. I just sort of agreed to help her with her son and do some channeling sessions and see what would happen. See whether anyone would come and talk to her and enlighten her about autism. That's basically what happened.
Wonderful. And did you have a from the reference to a photo that you posted on your Facebook wall, it has some pretty great minds on it. Did they all seem to approach you from the other side about this issue, you know, in relation to Laura, or did you kind of, I don't know. I don't know how it works.
All right. Okay. Just like every time we do this, when no one's allowed to say what they want to happen. So when they come see us, we just don't know what's going to happen. The spirit people are in charge, and there's a lot of people out there think that they drum up people and, you know, ask people to come and all that, and that's what's going to happen. Well, I couldn't say for sure that's how it works, but from my understanding, they're going to decide who's going to come and talk to us, and, you know, it's up to them. So we just kind of sat back and waited to see who would show up, basically.
We did all of the sessions over the phone.
Yeah, we never sat with her personally. We did it all over the phone. So we'd just sit down and I'd tell her who I could see him standing in front of me and what they were saying to me.
It's always up to them. There's no such thing as summoning a person.
And I was hoping that you would say that because, you know, there are a lot of people out there that do say, and some do claim that they can do that. So I was hoping that you would help me clarify that point.
I would really disagree with that. I think that's nonsense. You can't summon people up. They're not sitting in the bough of a tree waiting for you to summon them up. They have a life in the spirit world, and if they choose to come and talk to you, all well and good. You can ask them to come. That's not the same thing as saying I'm going to summon someone up. But you can ask them. You can say, if you can hear me, I'd love for you to come and talk to me or whatever. You can do that. That's how I first met Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
So, you know.
What was that like?
You didn't. The person that was doing the session asked for Albert to show up in his session. We had no idea.
Right,
You know, it was...
See, that's evidence.
Yeah, if the other person is thinking of someone or, you know, ask them, okay, come through to Michael or come through to Marty and, you know, let's interact here. And then it actually happens without them telling you about it. that they had, you know, put that cosmic inquiry out there, you know, it that is evidence.
I think so. Well, you know, how could you possibly know that this person asked Albert Einstein to come to the session? You couldn't.
And you know, the Weisenheimers that are sitting out in the paranormal community right now would go, because you're psychic, Michael.
Yeah, well, I don't walk around like it all day long, you know. I mean, you see...
We don't read people's minds.
Yeah, people are always saying, what do you get out of me? Did you get that from me? And I say, no, it's got nothing to do with you. Why would I get it from you? If I knew I was getting information from people, it's ridiculous. First off, I'd be a millionaire.
Exactly.
Right? Because think about it. You wouldn't have any, any integrity, would you? If you knew you were getting information from the person, it had nothing to do with the deceased person, then, and you're saying you do, then that would be a lie, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
You know, if you're saying you're getting it from the spirit people, but you know all along you're getting it from this person sitting, like you're a mind reader or something, then you wouldn't need to have any integrity, would you? I mean, you could just scam people. First off, I don't think it's possible, anyway. Telepathy between people is very rare. And people can psychically pick up on things from people, but not to this extent. You can't get the kind of information that we're describing by.
Well, I'm thinking like vibes and body language and those kinds of things only go so far. It's not going to give intimate details. It's not going to, you know, show you the inner workings of their thought processes.
The way someone looks tells me that their great great uncle from the Civil War is the person they were hoping to talk to that got blown up in a battlefield, but because they looked down at the ground or they winked or that's ridiculous.
Plus, we have right. These people don't even know. Maybe it's a message for their mother that they have no idea what it is, and their mother knows all about it, so we couldn't even read their minds to tell them that.
Right, exactly.
Not even in their minds.
Yeah, it's not in their minds.
Try talking to a lady and trying to convince her that her father's standing there when she doesn't even think that he's dead.
Oh, no.
And finds out, 10 minutes after she leaves that her father just died that morning.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
That's the kind of things that we encounter. You can't fake that.
Wow. Yeah. That's kind of got to be a little difficult for you, though, when they turn around and say, but he's still alive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you delicately just kind of, you know, how do you handle that? I mean, I would be like, well, no, he's not. You know, how do you do that? I mean, you have to use, you know, empathy and all of that to let him down easy. But, wow. Yeah, that would be an interesting experience. I don't know if I'd want to have.
Yeah, I know it was Michael didn't have an easy time at that one. It's hard when you get somebody sitting there that's saying, "Oh, I don't think that's him. I don't think it's him." You know, it's like, but this is his name. This is what he looks like, and yeah, but he can't be dead. My sister would have called me, you know. But
now, are there times? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying that was very difficult, but it turned out to be a very good session.
Do spirits seem stronger, like, right after death? Do they come through stronger, or... You know, you hate to use the term recently deceased, but is there a certain period, like, after they've been gone or crossed over, that they come through stronger, or, you
no,
know...
No, it's all a personal thing. Some people are just better communicators than others. We've had people come through, you know, I've drawn people that died 4 hours before. You know, Michael's had people come through within 10 minutes of their death.
And we speak to people that have gone hundreds of years.
Yeah, I've drawn a great 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 grandmother before, and they actually had a picture of her, which was really cool.
Wow, that's a lot of greats.
Yeah, five greats.
But you know, these are the things that the average person is wondering. I mean, if you don't have, you know, any real ability, and I know we all have it somewhere deep inside of us, just most of us just don't take the time to tune in. But you know, if you've never been through something like this, the only way we can comprehend what it is that you go through is to ask these questions. And how do you turn it off? How do they not, you know, like it's kind of constant knocking on the door or ringing the doorbell. How do you make it stop when you just don't want to deal with it anymore?
Well, it's not like that with us. You know, we have our arranged times when we're going to do sessions or when we're going to do groups. And other than that, the spirit people know that they're not to bother us. Unless there's someone, you know, there's a reason for it. Yeah.
It's more of a...
Well, you know, there's people out there and they're running around saying, oh, my God, they're just there all the time and... Oh, they just bug me all the time, and blah, 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 and I can't shut it off. And it's like, oh, give me a break. Learn some discipline. Get some discipline. You know?
Yeah, to right. Us, it's get more of a training. Turning it on than turning it off. We just sort of, you know, it's almost like you switch it on. But
it's not even that. It's just a case of deciding to look.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Deciding...
Now's the time to look.
To, you know, tune in and look around when I want to look around, when I'm ready. You know, I'm not I'm not a microphone for some nobody on the other side to just come along and pick up and start using whenever they feel like it. You know, I'm an individual and I have my abilities, and I use them when we've arranged time to use them.
I don't know why, but I'm just picturing two spirits duking it out. It's my turn. No, it's my turn. No, it's my turn.
Well, you know, occasionally you do get a little bit of that. You get people that are impatient on the other side, but most of the time we're dealing with people that have moved on. We're not dealing with discarnate people. There's a lot of nonsense out there written by people, you know, that really don't understand what's the subject. A lot of mediums out there on TV and stuff like that, they don't understand the subject at all, really. They say things like, you know, I don't even know how I do this. I just don't really understand this. And you hear them say it, and I think, yeah, you're right, you don't. You don't understand it. I'm getting bothered, you know, oh, I've got to go over and talk, I've got to, oh, there's this person bugging me. I was like, give me a break, you know.
You know, I've heard the phrase, I have to go to a cemetery because that's the only place that's quiet. I've heard that from at least two psychics. Well, the only time any quiet is when I go to a cemetery.
When people first get into all this stuff, they get very woo-woo. it's because they don't understand the subject enough, and so they have all these strange ideas about things. It's very simple. You know, the afterlife is a real place, far more real than this. It's our real home. This is not. This is just a temporary place.
It's just as solid as...
And it's real and solid. And when you're over there, that's your real home. You live there more than you ever live here. And you take on a body here. You're in the body that you're in on the other side while you're here. You're in it right now. You've just put on an overcoat called a physical body. And when you die, you drop off the overcoat. You're in the same body all the time, forever. And you just put an overcoat on and you walk around and you say, my name's Bob, or I'm Phyllis, or I'm Jackie, or I'm Jim. But really, it's just an overcoat, and then it gets worn out, and you throw it off, and that's it. That was your physical life. But you, the person, the soul, you're always the same. You're just taking on characters.
Yeah, you know, I get to keep my warped sense of humor.
You're taking on a personality, you see, which is molded by your environment, how you were brought up, you know, all the other things. If you were to remember your other life, the life that you lived before this one, then you wouldn't be the person you are now, because you would have memories of other things, and you'd be far different. If those memories came to you, you'd change. You wouldn't be the same person anymore. People's personalities change. Character doesn't change. Character is the real, you know, the real part of the soul. If someone's brave, they're brave. If they don't tell lies, they don't tell lies. If they're a generous person, they're a generous person. That's not going to change, you see. But personality, that's a changing thing, and that's subject to what goes on in a person's life. You know that and those things change.
Yeah, watch out, everybody. I'm going to come back crabby in my next one.
you know, and the people in the spirit world that come and talk to us, they're in the realms above the physical plane. They're in higher realms, and there are different realms. So some of the people are from much higher realms than others. They're all good people, but some are more knowledgeable than others. The people in the lower realms, we don't communicate with. There'd be no purpose to it, because they are, as it were, trapped in their own...
delusions.
In their own illusionary environment, and it wouldn't benefit anyone to communicate with them. That's not the purpose. That's not what we're doing. There are other people that do different kinds of work. I don't see them anymore. I don't really know anyone that does that kind of work, truly. But if you want to read about a book, like, that's a very good book, there's a book called 30 Years Among the Dead. And it's where they helped a lot of people, like, in mental hospitals that were possessed, suffering possession and things like that. And they used to hold spirit circles and help... they bring the spirit that was possessing the person and the person to the circle, and they'd have to explain to the possessing spirit their state, the state they were in. They were an ignorant, ignorant of their condition and thus and what was going on, and they'd have to explain to them what was going on, and it would take quite some time. So that's a whole different, you know, we don't deal with that. We're dealing with proving to most of the clients that come see us that this is actually real. And for that, you have to give a lot of hard evidence. You have to say, oh, well, your father was Bob, and his brother's Jim, and his brother died before him when he was 21 in a car accident, and blah, blah, blah. And you have to say things like that, and then they'll believe you. But if you don't, if you just say, oh, I have there's another person with your dad, I think it's your dad, it's a father figure, and there's another man with him, kind of like a brother, you know, friend. That's all vague. That's not what I deal with. You know, I'm dealing with specifics, because otherwise the people that are intelligent, but are skeptical because, you know, they haven't had any proof yet, that's what they need. That's what I would demand if I went to see a medium. I would say, I wouldn't say anything, I'd let them tell me. And if it was really accurate, then I'd think, wow, that was pretty good, you know. Not that I would question the authenticity of the spirit world in any way, because I know it exists. But if you want
real, then you have to use your brain. You can't just, you know, you can't just...
That reminds me of a time that Don called into a radio station, and I was listening to it, and she'd called in to get a reading, and it was very vague. And she said, no, they told me everything I wanted to know. And I said, Don, go listen to the podcast. She finally did, and she said, oh, my God, I told them everything.
Yeah, so I think she told me about that.
Yeah, you got to be very careful about that, because a lot of, you know, the psychics out there will get you to say more than you think you are saying. And that's
right,
one thing that we do is we always tape our sessions, and the person that sits with us gets the tape. So it's like that gives them proof of what really happened, or if they had a message for somebody else that's very skeptic, they can play that for them and, you know, show them that they didn't say anything.
Now, what happens when you do a session and say no one comes through? Have you ever had that happen where no one just... they all just have no interest in the person that you're sitting with, or is there always somebody that shows up?
No, that's never happened. If it appears that that's happening, it's because the person that's sitting with us will not think about the person that's trying to communicate, or they've gone blank in their mind, or they're trying to make us out to be fools, and they're not really listening, but someone is always there coming. They don't waste our time.
Yeah, or, you know, or the message is all for somebody else. Like Michael had a guy sitting with us years ago that the whole session he didn't understand. Of course, Michael's like wanting to quit, and the people on the other side, no, go on. And so he, you know, finished the session, and you could tell the guy was a little bit, you know, upset, or, you know, not thinking that it happened, until we met him later on, a few months later, and he told us that he played it to his mom, and she understood the whole thing. So that can be very difficult, you know.
Well, there's an even better example of that. There was a guy once sat with us for a short session. He didn't seem... He was very, like... what's the word? Flip. He didn't really... seemed like he just wanted to try and make me look to be a fool. You know what I mean?
Right.
This... Marty Drew, he didn't seem to understand much of the session at all. He just kind of flipped it off. And Marty Drew this guy, and he looked a bit like Jack Nicholson kind of looking. And she drew a thing on his shirt, on his that looked like a drag, like a phoenix. It was in an oval, and it had a phoenix. It was like a bird, and underneath it were flames. And he didn't know what this picture was. He didn't know the guys, and the guy had glasses on. He said, "No, I don't know who that is." She just didn't seem to care at all. Really, there's nothing I can do about this. If the spirit people are going to... The ones talking to me are the ones talking to me, and that's it. So anyway, the guy left, and we kind of... I told him that the guy was into martial arts and stuff, and he said, oh. And I said, well, maybe he's a spirit guide, and that's why you don't recognize him. Maybe you don't know him. And that's why you don't recognize him. So anyway, 2 years later, we kept that picture, and we kept it in our book. I just thought he was a cool-looking guy, so I kept it in the book. There was no photograph to prove who he was, but he was just cool-looking. So, anyway, we were at a fair, like a mind-body-spirit thing, and we were sitting there bored out of our mind on a Sunday morning. Nobody was there, and we were just thinking to ourselves, why are we here? What are we doing sitting in this stupid place, you know? And these bunch of teenagers came in, about 11 o'clock in the morning, kind of wandered through, and this one guy, he's quiet, you This one guy comes in, and he's got this shirt on, and it's got the same logo on his shirt as the guy in the picture.
Really?
My wife, yeah, almost identical, except for no flames under it, but it almost looks identical.
So I called him over, and I flipped the picture over to the one of the guy that I drew, and he looked at it, and he sort of laughed and said, "Huh, looks like my grandpa," and he looks at it closer and said, "It looks exactly like my grandpa."
Yeah, he got real serious, and he
looked
at it.
Oh, wow.
I said, "Are you joking?" And he looked real serious then. He said, "No, that's my grandpa." And he's kind of like, you could see all his wheels spinning in his head, you know. And he says, "Well, how did you draw my grandpa?" And I said, "Well, I was up in Pasadena. This was 200 miles away. This was in Escondido or somewhere down there." And I said, "Well, I remember up in Pasadena it was drawn, and he kept going on about martial arts and kung fu and stuff, and I thought he was like a martial artist." And he says, "When my grandpa died, he was born and lived all his life in Pasadena. He was a fireman. And that's when I realized what the flames were under the bird."
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's bizarre. And then he says, "When he died, we had a garage sale, and I sold over 100 kung fu movies and martial arts movies of his. They're the only ones he watched. They're the only movies he watched, kung fu and martial arts." I said, "Oh,
and all the pieces come together.
What happened was, that guy that sat with us, I know there were people trying to talk to him, and he flipped it off, so what they decided to do was use his session to benefit someone else.
Wow.
Yeah,
very impressive.
They basically said, "All right, if you want to mess around, if you want to be stupid, we'll come through with information for someone else then." And that's how they'll treat you. If you want to mess around, then, you know,
right.
So be it. You mess around. But, you know, we're legitimate mediums, so if you want to mess around, that's up to you. But that's how they look at it.
Wow, that is amazing. And you said that was like 2 years or so later?
Yeah, 2 years later and a couple hundred miles away.
Wow, is so amazing.
And he couldn't believe that his grandfather's picture was sitting in our book. And you see, that shirt that he put on, that kid, he hadn't worn it in 2 years. It was his brother's shirt. It was too small for him, and he didn't know why he'd put it on. He didn't even want to be there. His friends drug him along. He said, "I just got out of bed and went, oh, all right, where are we going? Oh, we go, all right." And he just picked the shirt up of his brother's and stuck it on. It was too tight on him.
Oh,
so his grandfather manipulated the whole thing and made him put it on. So we would know, you know, when we saw that shirt, we went, "Oh, shit, look at that. It looks just like the one in the picture." If we had not seen that shirt, I wouldn't have drugged him over to look at the picture.
Wow.
You know what I mean? That's how they manipulate things. That's how they make things work.
That is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. But we're going to pick up with this after our quick mid-show break. We have the news from Brian Whatley, the PCRN News. And when we come back, we'll get Laura Hirsch on the phone, and we'll talk about The Other Side of Autism and all of the work that you all put in on this book. And I'm really anxious to read it. And like I said, I really want to get a copy for that friend of mine. And I recommend it to anyone who knows anyone with autism, and I haven't even read it yet. I'm just so excited about it, and I think it's a great thing, and it really is an opportunity to show the general public that there are people out there like you guys that are, you know, you're the front line between, you know, here and the other side, and you're making a difference, because you're not, you know, you're not pulling the parlor tricks, and you're up front and forward and straight, and you have that integrity that we talked about. So I just really think you guys are you know, the real deal, and we'll be back to talk some more with you after this quick break. Don't go away. You're listening to Parachallenge Radio right here on Jackalope Radio. Be right back.
Welcome to Parachallenge Radio News, PCRN. My name is Brian Watley. This is your news segment for this ghostly Tuesday night. Your dead-on top news stories are...
About haunting sea stories and a coming-of-age tale highlight Fort Myers Museum series. Terror suspects tell judge he is sick. He sees ghosts. The ghosts of Jimmy Carter. And UFO war alien invasion part of religious agenda, says contactee. Our first story tonight is Haunting Sea Stories and a Coming-of-Age Tale Highlight from Fort Myers Museum Series, brought to us on September the 24th, 2012, and you can find this on news-press.com. Southwest Florida Museum of History Upcoming's author evenings feature three distinct voices with little in common except their literary shout-outs to local places. Kim Cool is features editor at the Venice Gondolier Sun by day. She moonlights as a historian and the writer of seven books in a series about Florida, most recently Ghost Stories of Fort Myers, Pine Island, Captiva, and Sanibel. The recent winner of two awards from the Florida Publishers Association, Cool will talk at the first event Wednesday about claims of a female spirit at the Ford House, a headless princess at Fort Myers Beach, stage frights at Arcade Theater, and the haunting of other locations in downtown Fort Myers. Like other events in the series, her appearance includes a meet-and-greet and book signing at the museum. Across the street from the museum is the Oasis Restaurant, which will offer extended hours for diners before or after authors' events, and of course by reservation. Pine Island resident Robert McComber will make his fourth appearance in the museum series to talk about his 10th novel in the Honor series, chronicling the maritime adventures of the fictional Peter Wake. In Honorable Lies, Wake travels to Cuba, which McComber visited several times for research into the history of Freemasonry in that country and how it factored into its struggle for independence. And Masons there were showing me things that were secret for more than 100 years. He'll talk to a museum audience in late October about the book and the others in the planned 22-book series, as well as the logistics of traveling to Cuba. It's an audience he enjoys. Our next story is terror suspect tells judge he is sick because he sees ghosts. This is brought to us by the LaCrosseTribune.com by Amy Forliti. A Somalia man accused of helping finance fighters for the terror group of Al-Shabaab in Somalia asked a judge on Monday to let him out of jail while he awaits trial, saying he has a sickness of the devil in which he sees ghosts and needs a spiritual healer. Mohammed Saad Ammar, 46, made the statements during a routine hearing in advance of his trial on terror charges, which starts next week. Ammar, who collapsed during a hearing last year, said he is also in pain. Chief U.S. District Judge Michael Davis acknowledged that he is aware Ammar has a history of seeing ghosts and other problems, but he denied Ammar's request, and the court is making sure that he gets the best medical care possible while in custody. He added that Ammar's attorney may submit information on cultural or spiritual healers, and Davis would view their credentials and decide whether they may visit Ammar. Ammar has been in custody since 2009, charged as part of the U.S. government's investigation into the recruitment of at least 21 men who authorities believe left Minnesota to join Al-Shabaab in Somalia, which the U.S. says he has ties to Al-Qaeda. He faces five counts, including providing material support to a foreign terrorist organization. "This is kind of like a devil," Ammar said through the interpreter. "Even if I pray, I still have pain. While I'm sleeping, I wake up with a nightmare." "Are you seeing ghosts?" Davis asked. "Yes," Ammar said. Ammar said he also feels unsafe in jail and that other inmates say he is with Al-Shabaab. "All these things they accuse me of is not something I commit," Ammar said. "I never planned to be against the U.S. government." Well, Davis said he is aware that Ammar had trouble sleeping and has had seizures while in custody. But he said Ammar never sought treatment before he was jailed and instead used alcohol, over-the-counter sleeping pills, and kite, which is a dried plant commonly used in East Africa that can give users a high when chewed. Well, he's been in custody for a long, long time, and he's taken medications for a long, long time, Hopman said, and he's not getting any better. The assistant U.S. attorney, John Docker, said Omar's health is of paramount importance, and if there are issues with medical care in jail, they should be addressed, but he argued Ammar should stay in custody. Mohammed Osman, one of Ammar's brothers, told the Associated Press in a telephone interview that spiritual healing could include using a certain type of incense near Ammar's head and reading the Quran over him. And for show notes, I would just like to say this has got to be the first case I actually heard about where somebody's trying to get out of it by saying he sees ghosts and that he's just sick. And I'm pretty sure that his brother says that certain incense raising above his head is probably just sage that all of us Ghostbusters have in our back pocket every now and then, or at least in our cool little toolbox. Our next story is The Ghost of Jimmy Carter by Jeff Cahoby on September 24, 2012, and this is found on patriotpost.us. One of the most peculiar details in the tale of Mitt Romney's 47% video is that it was unearthed online by James Earl Carter IV, a grandson and namesake of the 39th president. The self-described OPPO researcher and political junkie told NBC News that he had tracked down the person who recorded Romney's remarks in a May fundraiser and then put him in touch with Mother Jones, the left-wing magazine that publicized the video last Monday. Well, Carter's research assistant was credited in a terse endnote, but the reaction from his grandfather was more effusive. James, the former president, emailed, "This is extraordinary. Congratulations, Papa." And the young Carter wasn't coy about why he fascinated and facilitated the leak. "I'm a partisan Democrat," he said. "My motivation is to help Democrats get elected." But it was also personal. According to NBC, he wanted to retaliate against Romney's frequent attacks on the presidency of his grandfather, and particularly against the suggestion that Barack Obama's faltering foreign policy is Carter-esque in its irresolution. "It gets under my skin, and mostly the weakness of the foreign policy stuff," the grandson said. "I just think it's ridiculous, and I don't like criticism of my family." Well, the Carter years are a warning of what can happen when the leader of the free world won't leave. It may irk his grandson to hear it, but Jimmy Carter's legacy is still too timely to ignore. And our last story is UFO War, Alien Invasion, Part of Religious Agenda, says contactee. This is brought to us on September 23rd by Ramuel Samuels. UFO Sightings Daily report on September the 20th, 2012, that a U.S. Military and Foreign Affairs Journal published an article on September the 17th, 2012, which states that an Asian intelligence agency reports that a combined fleet operation between the U.S. and China has been going on, and a full combat operation against what we are told is a highly unfriendly extraterrestrial threat. Alex Collier suggests that this rumor may be playing out of a Book of Revelation scenario. Aliens such as Zekrons, operating through the mind-paralyzing human physical host, apparently scripted the Book of Revelation that is within the Bible. The Archons, who can move through time, apparently saw a future that human ethical extraterrestrials, through the contactees like Alex Collier, may be what we hope that, as humans, we'll seek to actively avoid. According to ethical extraterrestrials that Mr. Collier has been in contact with, an avoidance of such a future scenario is well within our essence. And in the form of an ability for self-determination, which we inherently possess, well, as higher dimensional entities. Alex Collier is one of many reported voluntary contactees unearthed by humans with other ethical extraterrestrials, higher dimensional beings. And yes, well, let's just say that higher ethical extraterrestrial beings, you know, if they're going to be higher extraterrestrials, I kind of hope that they're ethical. But anyway, and for something that I haven't had the chance to do in a while, let's talk about paranormal equipment. One of the things that I ran across this weekend while I was at Pensacola Paracon 2012 in Pensacola, Florida, is a tool that we use up in the Pensacola Lighthouse. And this gentleman had some type of device from Home Depot, and what it did, whenever you run it across an electrical interface or something, it would actually emit a sound. If you happen to know what that is, please send me an email at ParachallengeRadioLive or ParachallengeRadioAtLive.com, or just contact me at, you know, my normal email address. I think you guys know what that is. Anyway, it was a pretty cool tool, and if you happen to know, and it only costs like $20, and I think I could probably afford that, hopefully. But anyway, if you guys can let me know of some other really great tools that we can share out with the paranormal community, that's, you know, of good use and fairly inexpensive, then I like to get it back onto the show. I've been missing doing those type of things and announcing, oh yeah, and also announcing some other events coming up. So if you've got some cool events that you want me to announce on the news, then please let me know. I'd love to get them out there.
If you have any other stories, items, or events you would like mentioned on PCRN, please send an email to parachallengeradio@live.com. Attention, PCR News. And that's all for PCRN. I am your Parachallenge Radio news anchor, Brian Whatley. I am the director of Ghost Hunters of the South, located out of Mobile, Alabama. You can find us on the web at www.ghots.net. That's GHOTS.net. And you can email us through contact@ghots.net. Our team is a proud TAPS family member. Thank you for tuning in, and it's time for Lights Out.
You're listening to Parachallenged Radio with your host, PC, a Jackalope Radio production.
Hey, we're back, and we are back with the author of The Other Side of Autism, Famous Spirits Unveil Regressive Autism Causes and Remedies. We also still have Michael and Marty Perry on the line, who are both contributors to the book. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm very happy to have you here. I know a lot of people just within my Facebook friends list have, I know Joni Bennett, who does our segment a month, once a month for the events, the paranormal events that are coming up. She has a son, I believe, with Asperger's. As I said, I know I have a friend with autism, and you know, it's really not something that you ever really heard a lot about. You hear the name autism, but a lot of people don't have any even basic understanding of what it is. And really, I didn't either until I met this friend of mine, and she started really explaining to me what it is and how it can affect, you know, the person that has it and the family as a unit. And I really, when I saw the Perry's post about this, this book, I'm like, oh, that is just incredible. I just want to read it. And that's what prompted me to want to get you guys on the show here. And really, it shows in my eyes a way of connecting knowledge from the past, because most of the other side that came through were, you know, the real gray matter of the past, the real, you know, knowledgeable wealth of information, so to speak, that came and added their perceptions and thoughts and theories to, you know, this the autism, the thing that is autism. I mean, and it's really nice to be able to link, you know, common, or not common, but current ailment. I don't really like to call it a disability. You know, I don't like to call it that. It's kind of an affliction, so to speak. We all have those, which is how we cope with what we have. But to link that with the other side, this being a paranormal show, it just all fit together, the criteria of what information is important that I'd like to get out there. So if you want to kind of give us a little insight into, you know, how this book came to be and how you got, you know, linked or found the Perrys or, you know, asked them to be involved and how this all came together. And at what point did you decide to welcome the thoughts and theories from the other side?
Oh, boy, that's a big question. It's actually quite a long story. I first met Michael and Marty at a psychic fair in 2005. I was there to promote my first book, which is called Widowed Too Soon, and they were there doing their thing, and I had lost my first husband in a car accident in my 20s. And so I was like, oh, I got to check this out. It's a medium and an artist. This is going to be really cool. So I had a session with them while I was there, and it blew me out of the water. And I was like, oh, my God, I wish I would have met you guys before I put this book out, because that was the best session, reading, whatever you want to call it, I've ever had. And I proceeded to have a few, I think four sessions with them total over the years before we got together to do this book project. And that's, Michael touched on it a little bit, how that came about. But I had a son who was diagnosed with regressive autism, which means he was totally fine and normal, and then he wasn't. So it's something that happened to him later. He wasn't born with it. And I would have sessions to connect with my late husband, and oftentimes they would bring up my son, and I thought, wow, that would be really amazing to see what they could tell me about my son, how to help him, because he lost his ability to talk. So I had had another book project that I started with another medium that Michael had mentioned, and we never finished it, and I got a call out of the blue from a lady who owned a bookstore in town that I had seen Michael and Marty at, and said, they're coming to Reno. If you want a session with them, call them. And I said, okay, out of the blue I get this call. I'm going to call them. And I, on my way there, I just said, I didn't know what I should do about the book, because some of the same spirits that came through in our sessions for The Other Side of Autism had come through in, with this other medium, and I wanted to finish what was started, basically, because I knew they had more to tell me. And I put it out there to the universe, so to speak, in my own mind, like, if Michael mentions the name Albert Einstein, I will ask him to maybe do this book with me and finish this. And I didn't even have to ask him, because he offered to do it and mentioned Albert's name, like, in three different ways. So I was convinced that there was something bigger happening, that this was meant to be, so to speak. So that's how we initially met, and then we ended up doing, the three of us, Michael, Marty, and I, 23 sessions total for the book that became The Other Side of Autism.
Oh, wow. So, not to give away all the fine points of the book, because don't, you know, spoiler alert, don't tell me anything.
Right.
Any more than I need to know, anyway, because I do really want to read it. But what are the, what kinds of things can we look forward to as far as, you know, just give us little pieces of what, who kind of came through, and, you know, how it played in its role in the information that is incorporated in the book?
Well, like Michael had said, we just showed up, and whoever decided to talk to us, talked to us. We didn't say who we wanted to talk to or what we wanted them to tell us. So it was kind of a who's who, so to speak, of dead people that started coming through. And the interesting thing to me was some of the people that came through were people that I knew in life, my father who had recently passed, my late husband, but mostly people who were prominent in science, politicians, doctors, people who would be interested in the subject today. And from my understanding, they have a bigger perspective of what's going on than we do here. So I trusted what they said was true. And they gave us proof. It wasn't just, hi, I'm so-and-so. It was this person saying their name, they're telling me this date, this place, evidence that none of us knew at the time, but I looked up after the sessions. So it was a lot different than just your regular, yeah, this is your dead so-and-so, and you can instantly validate that. It was a lot of, okay, I don't know what I just said, but that's what they said, and I look it up later and call Michael and go, oh, my God, this is a person, and he knew this person and that person. And so it was a really interesting way of doing things that, you know, we just all kind of went with. And, you know, I don't want to drop all the names, but like I said, the name Albert Einstein, he was kind of the ringleader, I would like to say, and everybody that came through sort of knew him or was connected to him in some way. Names that we didn't even know.
I could say that Laura is a fantastic researcher. I mean, Michael would come up with things off the wall and didn't seem to be connected at all, and Laura would research it, and the connection was always there. It was just fantastic, the job she did at the research level.
Yeah, really. I mean, yeah, you did a great job there. I mean, I don't know how you found that stuff.
Well, and that just really validates what you guys do. I mean, it's another instance where you were validated because she found it in the research, you know, and it backed up, you know, your abilities, and that's awesome right there. That's what we need more of. You know, the validation is, you know, one step at a time, proving that, that these communications do honestly exist. Yeah, we have the ones out there who exploit it, but this is huge. I mean, did they really give you the insight that you were looking for as far as the answers to autism, as far as what questions you really wanted addressed the most without giving away too much?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they even, you know, gave suggestions as to things to try. And I did the things that they said, and my son improved greatly. So it wasn't just, you know, here's who I am. It was, here's who I am, and here's some of the things that have happened along the way. You know, autism isn't the same today as it was when it was first called autism in the 40s. It's two different things. You're not talking about a developmental disability or disorder. Regressive autism is an illness, and it can be prevented and corrected. So that's kind of what this is all about, is now the autism rate is 1 in 88, and that's based on 12-year-olds. So it's not even current. It's not from 3-year-olds. So you're going to see the rate go way higher than that. That's super conservative. 1 in 54 boys, you know.
Isn't it more prevalent? It's more prevalent in males than females, though, isn't it?
Yeah, five times more.
Wow.
So those were a lot of the questions that we, you know, addressed, and how to fix it. And so, without giving away everything.
But are the points, like, things that you would talk with your physician about, or are they things you can do at home? Are there different, like, food choices and you know, different habits and things that they... How in-depth did it get? I mean, did they really, like, pinpoint different, you know, different things that are modern today that might not have been in their time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for instance,
all the above.
genetically modified food. Let's talk about food. Genetically engineered food is definitely part of the problem, and genetic engineering in general. So you take out the genetically engineered food, you know, take out wheat was brought up. You know, diet's a huge part of it, but there's a lot of other parts as well. It's not just one thing. It's a lot of things.
Yeah.
No, same I've heard... Go ahead.
The causes. It's not all the same in every case. And in fact, we feel that autism, you know, when people are diagnosed with autism, it just covers a whole shebang of things. They just sort of, they don't know what it is, so they call it autism. It's mostly a brain dysfunction.
Now, have you heard of any links to vaccinations with a normally developing young child, and then they get vaccinated, and all of a sudden their speech patterns change and their behaviors change? That seems to be an issue that's you know, near and dear to my heart for a little fella that I know that. You know, that's what, you know, is being pinpointed in his case. But, you know, how many instances of that actually happen from vaccinations? It's just that maybe we'll never know that. I don't know. But, you know, is it something that we're doing today as a society that is making these rates jump? Because as I said, when we first got started in the second half, when I was young, you never really heard the term autism. And now all of a sudden it seems to be around every corner where you're hearing it so much that you have to kind of wonder, what is a society we need to change to get this under control? It's like cancer that's getting out of control as well. You know, it's following in the same growth rate, it seems, where it's just more widespread.
Yes, well, they brought up vaccines. There's definitely a component there. And I saw that with my son. And, you know, they brought up the fact that he had 10 vaccinations in, you know, around a year old. And I looked up in his baby book and, you know, looked at it and just about was horrified. You know, when you look at what's really in them, what's in the vaccines, I mean, it's horrifying. They don't tell you that when you take your baby in. You know, there's not informed consent. It's mandated.
Well, and then here you think it, you're doing something that's right for your child, when in fact it can, you know, harm them. How many parents really realize they tell you, oh, they might run a fever and they might have a, you know, site soreness from the shot, and that's about it. You know, they don't tell you, you know, long-term effects or anything that they can have. It's,
yep.
You don't know as a parent anymore necessarily what's right for your children, you know, medically, because you don't know if you're getting the full story of what exactly is going into their little bodies and how it might affect them even 3 years down the road. So,
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to reading this. I can't wait to share this with my friend as well, because, you know, it wasn't really until I met her that I really got to see how it can affect a family and the, you know, the dynamics change so drastically to you know, try to work around that child and their needs, and it's amazing. I give her tons of credit. She's got the patience of a saint. I tell her every time I see her, and I just, you know, I don't honestly know if I would be strong enough. Although if it's your child, you know, you do what you have to do for your child, and it can be quite a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my son's now 14, and he was diagnosed when he was 3. So all these years, I've been trying to, you know, figure out what happened to him and how to fix it. And he's made more progress in the last year, really, than he has ever. So there's no time limit on healing something like this.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like you have a little window of opportunity when they're a baby, you know, this old, and then forget about it. It's, you know, a lot of it is brain, yeah, and gut, and immune system, and a lot of those things can be work. I mean, a lot of kids are recovering. A lot of kids are losing their diagnosis. You know, if it's genetic, it's you don't lose a diagnosis if it's a genetic disorder. So, you know.
Right, exactly.
Now,
I do... Right. I do have a question from a listener. She was unfortunately, you know, couldn't be here for the show to listen to it live, but she has some things she wanted to share. And she put, I'm a mom of 2 autistic boys. One has Asperger's and ADHD, and the other has moderate to severe autism. One question, do autistic kids tend to be more psychic/intuitive? This might be in your area, Michael and Marty.
Yeah, this is the line. You sound like you're underwater. And
I get every other word.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, okay. I don't know if that's really true, because, you know, I know kids that are very psychic and they're perfectly, you know, normal. So I don't think that really has anything to do with it.
I would say
that they were psychic anyway, whether they're autistic or not. Do you see what I mean?
Right, exactly. So the autism doesn't necessarily...
I wouldn't include that in the equation. Do you see what I mean? You've got to treat autism as a separate thing, and not mix it up with other things, because that leads people to thinking, "Oh, my kid's special." You know, well, they're special no matter what.
Yeah, it's like saying, "Well, my child is crippled and can't walk, but he can play the piano like a Mozart." Well, he could probably do that whether he was crippled or not. It didn't really depend on that. And you would rather he be not crippled and still play the piano.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think like that. I think that it's just, you know, there are more sensitive souls coming in because the environment for them to be able to flourish is opening up. So, you know, if they have abilities, it's not looked down upon like it used to be. So, of course, if you want to come in and have, you know, higher souls coming in, now is the time for them to come in. But you have to separate it from the other things that are going on. I wouldn't say, oh, my son's psychic because he's autistic. No, I wouldn't say that.
All right. Her next question is, do they know that...
I've noticed some psychic abilities in my son with autism, but I don't think it's because he has autism that he has those abilities. But I have seen him display certain telepathic abilities, and I give a couple examples in the book, but I think that would have happened, you know, regardless. And maybe he taps into that more because he doesn't have the ability to talk. I don't know, but I have seen him, like, say things that were told to him mind to mind, and he'll say it out loud.
Oh, wow.
Stuff like that, but, yeah.
And the next question she had was, do they know that we as parents are doing the best we can? I don't know if she has, you know, difficulties in the interaction with her children, you know, where there's not much communication. I really don't know the whole situation, but this is what she included in the message, and she felt quite strongly about, you know, seeking the answers.
And I'm sorry, you cut out on me as well. That she's doing the best she can. I that part.
She wants to know, do they know that we as parents are doing the best we can?
Oh, do the kids.
Right.
Michael, you want to take that?
Michael? We're really having trouble hearing you. It's cutting out really bad now.
Todd, is there anything Abby? We can do? Or Todd?
It sounds really good on our end. I don't understand what the problem is, really.
I don't know either. I'm hearing a little bit of distortion from Michael and Marty. I don't know. It's probably just Skype acting like Skype.
Well, on our end, you sound good, and they sound good. So I don't understand why they can't hear you proper. Really,
but you're breaking up now too, Amanda. I don't know what that's all about.
Weird.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. But again, with the question, do they know that we as parents are doing the best we can? Was her next question.
Well, it depends on the parent, I guess. If you do nothing, that's not the best you can. There are a lot of things that you can do, and that's one thing that they talked about in the book. There are a lot of things that you can do to help the child. If you're doing as much of that you can, yes, there's, you know, but if you're doing nothing, then no. You know, it's hard to
exactly.
answer that when I would know that what she's actually doing.
Right. And then
I know plenty of parents who, you know, just say, well, there's nothing I can do, and so I'm just going to have the school district do this, and they don't go the extra mile. They don't do all the research. They don't try to find alternative answers and find other ways to help their child. And then there's other parents who would, you know, move mountains and have and do and get out there and do everything and anything to do what they can for their child. So if you're doing the very best you can and you know that in your soul, then yes. But some people get lazy or complacent or give up. Or they're too
right.
frustrated or too tired and they can't deal with it. So it depends on the person.
And she has one other question. Do they have a secret language that other autistic kids understand? And she says she asks this because she's observed it from a peer play experience, from peer play experiences.
I would say
that didn't come up. I don't know. Have you ever noticed that, Laura?
Sometimes with my son and his peers in school, like, they just seem to understand each other without saying a word. So it's hard to say when they're not verbal.
A lot
I'm
of
wondering
kids whether they have autism or not. A lot of kids, if they get a rapport with other kids, they just they seem to have a language that adults don't understand.
Right. Do you think it's a way of the brain compensating for the inability to have that basic communication ability?
Well,
you can't help but wonder if they're
I think the whole thing is this, right? If everyone runs around treating it as though it's something special and they don't want to do anything about it, I think that's wrong.
Right.
Because, you know, there are lots of very talented people out there and they're not autistic. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to ask Laura what's it like raising an autistic son, she'll tell you. It's not fun. It's not, you know, it's not something that you would wish on anyone. And if someone says, oh, my child's autistic and I'm fine with it, well, great. You obviously, you know, you can't, am I right, Laura? I mean, you can't put yourself in a person's shoes, really. And people say things like, oh, I have an autistic son. And when they describe them to me, they don't sound as autistic as Laura's son to me. And I think a lot of people like to jump on the bandwagon, too, and they say, oh, I have an ADD kid, or I have a kid with this or a kid with that, because it makes them special. But in a lot of kids are just, you know, undisciplined, completely undisciplined. And there's no discipline with the kids. And things like that. And they're saying, oh, they have ADD. No, they don't. You just don't discipline them. They have no idea what discipline is.
You also have to think, what are we as human beings here for? Are we here to just get by? Are we here just to, you know, encounter these difficulties? That's not what I think we're here for. We're here to experience the physical life as much as we can and gain in our spiritual life from it.
Yes, that's a good answer. That's exactly right.
And if you have disabilities, that's going to hamper.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or that you could contribute to society. How can you contribute to society when you cannot communicate?
Exactly. You know, people are looking at this autism. I think that people are looking at this whole autism thing like, oh, well, it's unique. It's this. It's that. These people need looking after all the time. It's mm-hmm. a huge burden on society. It's not, you know, this is something that we have to find a solution for.
Right.
This isn't something, I don't think, you know, I mean, like we said, there's people out there that will argue with us over this, no doubt. But every time the people on the other side referred to it, didn't they, Laura? They called it brain damage. Just like kidney damage or liver damage or heart damage. So whatever's going on, these people are not fully functioning. You know, they're not what we call normal. I mean, I look around, I don't think people are normal, not when I, you know.
They think I'm
a lunatic island sometimes. When I look. They have no idea what's going on, you know what I mean? So what is normal? But I mean, if you can't communicate and you can't put your socks and shoes on and you can't use the toilet or you can't whatever, then you're like an invalid, for God's sake. You have to be looked after. So with that, so many kids getting like this, it's getting epidemic. I mean, it's nuts. Something's got to be done. That's why I decided.
Once the parents are no longer here to take care of these kids, who's going to take care of them? I mean, by 2040, it's going to be 1 in 9 at the current rate that it's increasing every year.
Wow.
You
know,
it's
society's problem. It's not just the parents. You know, who's going to house and take care of all these kids if they don't get better? The ones that can. You know, and like I said, we're talking about regressive autism, where the child was normal and then they weren't. And that's the majority of the cases now.
Hey, Laura,
does that just keep regressing, or does it go to a certain point and then stop? How do you know if that child is still regressing?
It depends on the child. Every child's different. The severity of it's different.
Wow.
That's what I was saying before. Doctors and everything just want to put all of these kids in one block, and they all have autism, period, where each child is so completely different, and the things that contributed to how they got there are different.
I mean, you know, you can have different conditions in your liver that can make your liver sick. You can have, you know, different conditions that make your heart sick. You know, you could have a blood clot that goes into your heart, cause you to have, you could be eating such a bad diet over the years that your heart, you know, is like twice, three times the size it should be because it's messed up.
Or it could be a birth defect.
It could be this, it could be that. So an organ in your body, and the brain is an organ. The brain isn't you, the brain's an organ. So the brain is just an organ. It's like everything else, and it functions just like an organ does, and it gets sick. So what's making it sick? Why is it functioning the way it is? Now when people are you know, blind, I'm sure that they tend to listen more, and if they've got good hearing, that's a really good hearing, maybe it becomes acute because they're using it more than any other sense. So there's probably going to be some extra, shall we say,
abilities?
Yeah, well, not abilities, but use of certain areas of the brain because other areas of the brain aren't working properly. See what I mean?
Right.
So we may notice a bit more psychic increase but that doesn't mean that this person's functioning properly. Good Lord. It's hard enough to find people that are fully functioning and can do just about in life. You know what I mean? I mean, look around you. There's people that couldn't run 100 yards without dropping dead, for God's sake. You know, there's people that can't even bang a nail in a wall. There's people that, I mean, people generally narrow their scope down to their abilities, you know, like some people are very good at using their mind to do, you know, there was some tests done years ago, and they said that if you're doing a job like a construction job where you're building things and making things, you use far more of your brain power doing that than you do just sitting down writing things, because you have to conceptualize it. You have to see it in your mind, and you're using different, your brain in a different way when you're building things and making things, because you're turning these things around in your mind. It's like on a computer. You use a lot more computer power to turn three-dimensional, to play video games and all that kind of stuff. It uses a lot more power to do that. A lot more of the computer's, ability to do that than it does just type a letter. So it's just like that with the brain. The brain works the same way. So I'm sure that some functions within the brain, if they're, are linking through with other areas of the brain, perhaps more than they normally would, because there's no other pathway. So that's what happens, I'm sure, with these kids. They have to find some outlet or other way to express themselves.
Have you seen the movie Temple Grandin? Any of you?
Yeah, but she's a high functioning autism.
But can we not draw some ideas from her case and others like her? You know, different approaches to different learning mechanisms and techniques and things like that. I mean, I don't want to go too far in depth here, but I think there's, I don't know. I've seen, and my only experience with autism is my friend's son, and I've spent enough time with him, and he's rather functioning. He does have his social difficulties and things like that, He's a very sweet boy. He's very empathetic when needed, you know, when he can muster that. But I haven't seen any of the harsher cases, you know, where it's really to the point of zero communication. I have never personally, you know, encountered that myself, but from my experiences and just in what I've read and things like that, are we getting any closer to helping these kids? Is there a plan in place? Is anybody, you know, aside from, you know, just theorizing, is there any kind of federal direction of helping these kids aside from just, you know, sticking them in a special ed class and, you know, hoping that they're absorbing something?
Well, Laura can answer that better. Laura knows more about that.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions there, but like you mentioned, Temple Grandin, she's an adult with, they'd call it Asperger's. Not the same as a sick child who has brain damage from multiple toxins over a short period of time. We're not talking about the same thing. So even though some of the symptoms may look the same, it's not the same thing. That's the problem. That's part of the problem, is until there's a consensus on what's causing, you know, these children to regress and, you know, become what they're calling autistic, it's going to keep happening. And if the people that are putting these things out there that are causing these problems are, you know, not going to even cop up to the fact that that's part of it, it's going to continue. So,
right, and that's, you know, that's really the sad fact, is that they have no idea. There is no one pinpointable, you know, reason that this is happening and why it's increasing. And that's, you know, that's, I think, the focus of direction, you know, for future generations. But right now we have to, you know, somehow, you know, I'm sure what you're doing with your son is, you know, is to the best of your ability. You sound like you're completely involved and proactive. And that's, I think, the example that needs to be set, you know, and the precedence needs to be set to that level where, you know, if you're, you know, you have a child that has, whether it's a learning disability, which, you know, is minor compared to what you're going through, I understand that. But the message that I'm trying to convey is, you know, we are getting help from the other side, as is proven here with the three of you working together. And hopefully that'll lead other people, when they pick up this book, to maybe theorize a little bit and, you know, hopefully the ball will get rolling in the right direction and we can find a reason for this. You know, I mean, it's really a complicated thing. I know the struggles that this family that I know has, and I love them dearly, and I give them a lot of credit for what they're doing and hanging together as a family and just working through it. Granted, I know there are a lot of cases that are worse than theirs, and some that are better, but I'm just hoping that, you know, at least an understanding has been reached, even more so than, you know, 2 hours ago when we first started this show, that people might have a better understanding of autism itself.
Yeah, you know? I wanted to say one thing, too, that the book, I want to make it very clear to everybody, nothing in the book is our theory or our idea. It's completely from the other side, so it's nothing to do with us. We didn't say, oh, I think this does it. No, it's what we got from the other side, and I trust them a lot better than I trust most of the people I know on the physical plane.
You don't shoot the messenger. So yeah, I really, really, you know, am enjoying this conversation, and to know that they're paying attention so much to what's going on in today's society, you know, health wise and with this issue especially, it's really amazing to sit back and just, you know, think that they're clued in, they're paying attention, they're, you know, they're still theorizing even though they're not on this physical plane.
Oh yeah, well, they're still very connected. You have to realize too that they're eventually going to have to come back here too, so they want to make it a better place for them to come back to.
Yeah, the way we're going, we're polluting the whole place.
They
might not have a healthy body to come back into.
Exactly. Nope. I don't know. It's just
autism. It's one in six children has a, you know, some sort of what they call developmental disability. You know, the alphabet soup of disorders out there: ADD, ADHD, OCD, ODD, food allergies through the roof. You know, this wasn't around 20 years ago. So what are we doing here?
But like Michael said before, some of them I think are disciplinary. You know, I have a son who has some difficulties reading. Been working with him for years on this, along with the schools. And he's really making great forward progress, which is awesome. I'm completely proud of him for putting the best foot forward and doing the best that he can and applying himself and things like that, just helping him to develop different study plans and things like that. And there have been many times in meeting with his teachers and things like that, when especially when he was younger, where they would give me a packet of papers to take to my family physician and have him declared ADD. I'm like, no. If the boy can sit down and focus to take a VCR apart for 3 hours or whatever it takes, and then take those parts and put them together to make something completely different, he doesn't have ADHD or ADD. If he can focus for 3 hours on one thing, I'm not going to medicate him. I like who he is. Why should I change who he is because you can't take the time for him? You know, I think
they just have to label things, don't they? And they want to give them medicine, make it not a problem anymore for them, at least. The medication that they use just acerbate the condition usually.
Well, I've seen so many kids, they take it and they're like little zombies with headaches who don't eat. It's crazy. It not to say there aren't kids out there that need it, but I think the society is quick to medicate now. Society is really quick to not want to take the time to deal with each other. And that's their answer for everything, and who knows what the long-term effects of that is. So
I always believe most of the medication can be done away with if you just medicate yourself with the right food, the right nutrition, herbs, homeopathic, all this medication that has all the side effects is just, you know, creating more problems.
Right. Unfortunately, we are down to 3 minutes, and I want to make sure to tell everybody where to get a copy of the book. And Laura, I'll let you take that honor.
Sure. Thank you. It's pretty much available everywhere now. You can get it on any of the e-books. It's available in paperback on Amazon.com. I have a website, theothersideofautism.com, and it has links to all the e-book and paperback retailers that it's available at currently. It should be going more worldwide in a few weeks with the expanded distribution. So it just recently came out. This is our first interview together about the book, and we'll just see where it goes. I think our hope is that people will look at it and, you know, it can make an effect immediately in people's families, and then have the medical community look at it and say, oh, okay, because it's something that can be used to help these kids.
Right.
You know? Like Marty said, it's not us saying this is it, this is what it is. It's coming from a different source, which makes it even more valid in my eyes.
Right.
And a lot of these things have already been touched upon, you know, and suggested, some of them, but some of them are unique. And I don't want to really get into the specifics because we don't have time, but there was a lot of information given. There were 23 sessions that we did together, great pictures drawn by Marty. It was just a really incredible collaboration, and we were all in awe of all these wonderful spirits that took the time to come forward and give us this information to help humanity. And that's really what it's about.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I can't wait to get my copy.
People with autism, too. The book actually you know, is much more widely would be appreciated, because, you know, it's also anybody that's interested in the other side, how we work, how we get information, and, you know, the whole workings of it. So it's not just for people that know somebody with autism.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys so much. It was great talking with you and catching up with you, Michael and Marty. And it was great to meet you, Laura. And I wish you luck in the future. And I hope your book does really well. I really do. And I'm looking forward to getting my copies. And thank you for sharing your time and your Tuesday night with us.
Thank you for having us, Kath.
You have a wonderful evening, and we'll keep in touch.
Okay, Kathy. Definitely. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Michael, Marty.
And thank you to everybody who tuned in this evening. And we know it was a lot of information to digest. We tried to get in as much as we could, and there's so much more to talk about. It's really, you know, a difficult thing for parents and families going through these things, and we're trying to get it all out there, you know, and get the information to you that the other side has brought over. So check out The Other Side of Autism on Amazon.com. Gotta go. Night Watch is coming up next, and you're listening to Parachallenge Radio right here on Jackalope Radio. Well, not any longer, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Parachallenge Radio is a Jackalope Radio production, simulcast on ASPRN. Join us in the chat at www.parachallengeradio.com, or you can go to jackaloperadio.com in the shows area and click on the Parachallenged Radio banner.